Okay, in Revelation, God sends some letters out to the churches, and one of the letters goes to the Laodicean church, which is famous for being the lukewarm church, that God says, you're neither hot nor cold, so I'll spit you out of my mouth. I don't know what you feel like Christmas time. Do you ever feel lukewarm? Is that Christmas spirit not quite stirred up very well? What's in your heart? You ever get a lukewarm sort of, where am I going in life? What's going on? Well, another thing, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about another thing that in that same letter to the Laodicean church, Jesus says, behold, I stand at the door and what? Knock. I stand at the door and knock. If you hear my voice and open the door, I will come in and we will share a meal together as friends. And I thought I'd share an interesting twist on the idea. I want to get your brain juices flowing this morning. Does Jesus need to stand outside and knock? No. It's interesting to think. Remember after the crucifixion and the disciples were all worried that they were next. And so they hid themselves away. They locked themselves in a house, and they said, we're going to stand here because we don't want the Jewish leadership coming after us and crucifying us next. So they're hiding away, locked inside a room, and Jesus shows up, and what happens? It's not like he's standing outside the door. Hey, guys, it's me. Come on, let me in. No, really, I'm back from the dead. Let me in. Open the door. I'm here. I know you're in there. Come on. No, it wasn't like that. It was, he just goes right through the door. Jesus has, science fiction has nothing on Jesus, because it's like Scotty does a site-to-site transport. And one second, he's outside the door, and the next second, he's in the middle of the room. And I don't know what the reaction was. I mean, everybody was in awe, but that first gasp of Jesus is here, what it must have been like. And so Jesus just appears in the room. He's like, hey, guys, look who's back. Peace be with you. Check out these gnarly scars I've got. And they were going wild, I'm sure, that they're amazed because they were afraid. They're afraid for their lives. Their Lord is dead. The guy who they thought was going to lead this revolution is gone. And all of a sudden, he's back standing in the midst of them. I'd love to have been there and seen what point where it finally dawned on them that the door was locked. And Jesus is standing here amongst us. What was the reaction like? It must have been pretty cool to be there and see what they must have felt. But Jesus, he doesn't have to stand outside the door and wait. He doesn't have to stand outside and knock. He could just bust into your life and say, all right, that's enough. Things are changing. I've brought a church work crew, and we are cleaning house in your life today. And I've got a dumpster outside, and everything that you've got is out. We're changing your life. You're not going to recognize yourself when I'm done with this mess. You just won't even know what hit you. And no, thank you. I don't need your input. I don't need your ideas. You just sit down and shut up, and I'm going to take care of things. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to start here in this closet that you don't want anybody to find out what's in this closet. But just wait till the church finds out what's in that closet as we're cleaning it out. Jesus doesn't do that. And I'll bet some of you are very glad that he doesn't do it that way. And you like having control of your life. I mean, we all do. You like having control over your own mind and your own will and your own life. You don't want to be forced into anything. And Jesus knows that because he created you. He made you that way. He gave you a free will. And God doesn't want to have to force anybody into submission because that just doesn't work. He wants people to return his love voluntarily because forced love is not love. It's slavery, and it breeds contempt. If somebody forces you to do something, you hate them. And so God can't force you to love him, but he wants you to. So Jesus stands there, and he waits. He knocks and says, may I come in? May I be a part of your life? Will you let me be there? And he stands there, and he says, when you're ready, I'm going to wait here. I'm going to be here. I'm going to follow you, and I'm going to wait here outside your door. And when you're ready, I will come into your life. And I will, this is an interesting thing, I will be the door in your life. Jesus is the door. He says when the robbers and the spiritual thieves and the spiritual robbers come after you, he says, I will be the one to protect you. When Satan comes prowling around like the roaring lion, I will be the door. And nobody can get past me. I am the door, and you've got nothing to fear. And that's why it's a voluntary thing, because you still have your own choice. You still have your own free will. If you never give up your ability to choose what you want to do with your life. Even when you choose to follow Jesus, you still have your own free will. You can choose to say, you know what, I'm done. I'm not going to follow you anymore. I'm going to go my own way. It's your life. You get to do what you want. And so this idea is you can have, you know, you can have a solid iron door on your house. You can have 1,000 deadbolts. And so that nobody with a tank, you can have the kind of door where bombs couldn't break it open. But if you don't lock it, it doesn't serve the purpose. If you don't make the choice to lock your door isn't any good. And it's the same with Jesus. He is an impenetrable force, and he can keep you safe as one of his own for all eternity. And nothing can snatch you, he says. Who are those who are mine? Nothing will ever take them away from me. But you can still choose to walk out the door. You can still choose to ignore the power and the strength of Jesus and say, you know, I'm going to leave you out of my life. I don't want you. And so you've got to be willing to live. You've got to make the choice for yourself to be willing to live your life in concert with Christ. Otherwise, there's nothing Jesus can do for you. Does that make sense? He can't force you to have a pure heart. I mean, he could force your behavior if he really wanted to, but he can't force your heart to change. That's what you have to do. You have to make that decision. If your heart's not holy, nothing you do will ever matter. It's not the externals that matters, it's the internal. It's what happens on the inside of you, because that affects everything else that you do. If you're a pure and holy person on the inside, then what you do is pure and holy. But if you're not, then nothing that you do matters. So if you're sick of the devil in your life, if you're tired of the troubles and the stress of sin and the guilt, you know, it's a matter of relationship. Jesus can help you to boot the devil out of your life permanently, to change everything, but you can't have both. There's no such, you've seen the cartoons with the angel and the devil in the shoulder. There's no such thing as that in real life. Jesus is not a roomie with Satan. He will not allow that. He will not be in the presence of evil. So he wants access to your whole house. When he talks about letting him in the door, he wants everything. He says, if you're going to open the door, I have free reign, and we're going to change things around. But you have to make that choice. And he knows what's best for us. He created us. He knows what's really good about life. He is life. So it's not like you open the door to your life and you move a couple things off the couch so Jesus has a place to sit down. He comes in and he has relational remodeling plans for your entire life. And he wants to do home improvements, major home improvements in your spirit. And as the door, as the one who becomes that door who protects us, he knows who ought to be kept out and who ought to be let in. And so the Holy Spirit tries to guide you and tries to get you to do what you ought to do. And so Jesus stands as the door and he says, oh, here's that small group Bible study. Yeah, let's let those guys in. Come on in, guys. Come right in. Make yourselves comfortable. Here's some friends who will actually hold you accountable for your behavior. Yeah, definitely make yourself at home. We want you in here. And oh, yeah, let's not forget to call the pastor and invite him over. We want those people in your life. But these people that you know will encourage you to do things that are bad, no, let's keep them out. These people that you know are a bad influence, you know, let's not let them in right now. And so Jesus helps you to make those. You still have to make the choice, but Jesus, the Holy Spirit, guides you and directs you. And you find things start to change. When you let Jesus in your life, you find things start to change for the positive in your spirit. You feel the joy, you feel the peace and the comfort, and you're kind of surprised because you start doing things like you're hosting a Bible study in your home. You've never even read the Bible before, but all of a sudden you've got friends coming over to study. Your friends are just as surprised as you are that you're having a Bible study in your home. This is weird, but hey, this is kind of cool. And so your life really starts to change. You know, John talked about a gift that really makes a difference in life. And that's the gift of Jesus. And Jesus has done, he likes to do extreme makeovers in your life, in your spirit. And it's always your choice, and there's nothing that can change you but you. But when you make that choice, nothing is the same. Everything starts to change. And you wonder, how did this happen? Well, it's a matter of relationship. It really is. It's who you choose to give your life to. It's always your choice, but Jesus, when he only comes in when your choice is to accept his way of life. He says, I'm here, I'm waiting for you, and these are my rules. And when you're ready to accept this way of life, I will come in and I will make my abode with you, and we'll eat together, and we'll do everything together. He doesn't need you to open the door, but he lets you open the door because he's a gentleman and because he knows that's really the only way that it'll work. The only way you can have a true relationship is if you choose to love him, if you choose to invite him in. But in the same chapter in Revelation where he says, I am the door, in another letter to a different church, he says that he is the one who can open doors that no man can shut. Isn't that interesting? And so, I don't know, some of you might be looking for a job. Some of you might be looking for hope this time of year. Some of you might be looking for a way out of your wicked life. I don't know what you're looking for, but everybody's looking for something. And whatever it is, you don't know what's going on in your life. You don't know why things are working out the way they do, why things are so difficult. Jesus is the one with the power to change your life. He holds all the keys. He's the one who can open the doors that need to be opened to change your life. He says, why don't you pray to me? Why don't you open that door and let me in, and we can work on these problems together? I can open doors that nobody can shut. I can make a way for you. Just turn to me and you'll be amazed. I'll open some doors in your life that you never thought possible, that you never even imagined. I think about myself standing up here. I never would have imagined that I'd be standing as a youth, as a teenager. I would have never thought I'd be standing in front of a group preaching about Jesus. No way. That's impossible. If somebody said, showed me, could travel in time and make a video of me standing up here and bring it back, I'd say, that's got to be fake. I would never be doing that. But Jesus opens doors that no man can. And so it's amazing the kind of opportunities. I don't know if you've ever passed the door that says authorized personnel only, and you're wondering what goes on in that room. I wish I could get in there. I'd be fun to be an authorized person to see what kind of things go on behind the scenes. And you wonder what goes on. I wish I could see in there. Well, guess what? Jesus, he says, you want authorization? I am the authority. I can open the doors where nobody else can open, that nobody else can shut. And you ask, well, where are you going to lead me, Lord? Where is it going to take me? If I open the door to you, where are you going to take, what doors are you going to open for me? I don't know what's happened. Have you ever gotten a job that you didn't think was possible? Have you been blessed or been in the right place at the right time and things just seem to somehow work out? Have you ever been in that situation where you don't know how it happened, but something happened? How many doors have you walked through that Jesus opened for you that you didn't even know were there, that you just walked through and you had no idea what Jesus was ahead of you taking care of? How many opportunities, how much have you been blessed in your life and you didn't deserve it? And you know you didn't deserve it, but here's some blessings. And you said, wow, this is amazing. That's Jesus. That's Jesus doing that work. And this is a great time to think about blessings. I mean, I really hope that you're blessed this Christmas. I hope that you get all sorts of good stuff in your stocking. I hope that you have good times with your family, that you eat way more than you need to, and it's all super delicious. I hope that you have a wonderful Christmas. But I hope that you take it in the right perspective, because none of that is Christmas. It's not the food. It's not the presents. It's not the lights and the trees. It's Jesus is Christmas. We have misconceptions about Christmas because we've gotten so much of the world mixed in. You know, we have Santa, and one misconception, I think we watched the video about the nativity this morning. And it's, we always see this picture of a shack, you know, a rickety old barn or a cave or something like that. And really, the language, the word for inn, where it says there's no room at the inn, that's the same word that is used for the upper room where Jesus had his Last Supper. That's the inn. And there's no room in the upper room. Really, most likely, Joseph went home to his ancestral family, and he was staying with family. And so much family had gone back there that there was no room in the upper family area. And so they had to stay down in the part of the house where people would bring their animals into the building because that would keep them safe and warm at night, and also the animals would help provide warmth inside the house because they didn't have central heating and air back then. And so really, he was probably with family. There's just such a packed house because everybody went back to their ancestral home because Caesar had ordered it, that they had to stay in the part of the building that the animals stayed in. There's just, you know, simple misconceptions. Not a big deal, but but we have a lot of misconceptions about Christmas. One misconception is that it's about presents, or it's about decorations and Christmas carols and visiting family and eating turkey and spiral cut honey baked ham and, you know, all these, the cookies and the candy and all those great things. That's not what Christmas is about. Christmas, if you really think about it, Christmas is like a secret invasion. It's like, you remember when the Allies got together and they invaded Normandy after the Nazis had taken over France, and the Allies did everything they could to keep this secret plan where all their forces, everything they had, they were going to throw at this one beach. And they knew a lot of people were going to die. They knew in advance that this is going to be a tough battle, and we're going to have to do everything that we have. We're going to have to throw at this one beachhead so we can try to get past the enemy. And that's what Christmas is. Jesus on a secret mission that gets revealed at Christmas, that he comes into the world that's been invaded by an enemy force. You know, the Nazis had taken over France. Satan has taken over the world. And Jesus comes in a secret mission to invade the world and to sacrifice his life. And he knows what he's going into. To sacrifice his life the same way soldiers sacrifice themselves for freedom. It's a spiritual battle. Christmas is about a spiritual battle for the lives of men and women. Millions of lives. A lot more lives than were at stake in World War II. That's what Christmas is about. It's about a war. And Jesus coming in this secret plan to throw everything he's got to come into the world to set people free, to rescue people from the enemy. Christmas isn't about we talk about all the have a holly jolly Christmas, which is fun. I like the songs. I like the candy. I like all the Christmas stuff that we do. But Christmas, you got to look past that and see through to the truth. Christmas is a holy war. And Jesus Christ is the one saying, I'm going to lead the troops, and I'm going to go in ahead of everybody, and I'm going to put everything on the line. I'm going to sacrifice myself to make a difference. And that's what Christmas is about. It's about saving people, about changing lives. So, you know, I hope that when you're looking, you know, when you wake up on Christmas, that you're looking forward to a lot of good stuff, that you get all the food and the candy and the gifts and all that stuff. But I hope that you don't get so wrapped up in the worldly things and the gifts, and that you neglect the one gift that can save your life, the one gift that can really make a difference, the one gift that can change everything. I don't know, has the world caught your eye this Christmas? Have you been caught in with the commercialism and Santa Claus and the food and the candy and the presents and the trees and the... Have you fallen for Satan's propaganda? That there is no spiritual to Christmas. You know, we say it. We say Jesus is the reason for season. But is he really in your life? Is Jesus really the reason for the season? Do you have that joy? Or are you going to get up on Christmas morning and go through all the traditions that you usually do and open the presents and eat the food, and then at the end of the day, be dissatisfied? You say, these things are great, I like the toys, but there's still something gnawing at me on the inside. There's still an empty spot. There's still something I'm missing. Is that going to be your life on Christmas? I hope not. You know, the world says, Satan's propaganda is the world that God is just so narrow. He's so demanding. You know, it's just too hard to do what he says. But I'll tell you what God is. God is the truth. And sometimes that's hard to take, but it's the truth. And God is, he's specific. He's straightforward. He doesn't mince words. He doesn't try to make a show. He just says, this is the way it is, folks. And you get to choose to take it or leave it. And he says, you know, I am the way. There is only one way. But that's one of the nice things, is that there's, you know, it's easy, it's simple. There's one way. You can't mess it up. And Jesus said, just follow this one rule, love. I mean, you sum the whole law up in these two commandments, to love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself. Easy. If you do that, You can't go wrong. If you love God with everything you are and you love your neighbor with the same kind of the depth of love that you love yourself and take care of yourself with, everything's going to go right. You've got, and we've got this whole season, this whole Christmas time of year that, you know, people get caught up in presents and trees and Santa and all those fun things. And God is saying there's only one gift that matters. There's one thing to remember, one gift, one important thing, and that's Jesus Christ coming to the world. And he is the only way to salvation. Jesus is the door, and it's our job to lead people to that door so that they can find safety and salvation and comfort and peace. And what better time than Christmas to do it, to take that message? You know, in Exodus, when Moses was being sent by God into Egypt to rescue the Israelites, he said, "Who do I say is sending me?" And God says, "I am." You tell him that I am is sending you. And Jesus said, "I am the way. I am the truth. I am the life." And you know, they didn't crucify him because he said, "I'm the light," you know, because he's the light, or because he's a door, or because he's the way. They killed him because he said, "Before Abraham was, I am." And the religious leaders didn't like Jesus claiming to be God, and that's why they killed him. And now he's knocking on the door of your heart, saying, "I am the way. I am Christmas. Will you open your door? Will you let me in? Will you let me change your life? Will you let me be the gift that makes a difference? Are you willing to accept the one way of salvation? To open your door, to let him be your door, to let him be your protection, to let him be your comfort, and your safety, and your peace, and your fulfillment. And live in his house, by his rules, which you know are better for you. You know that that's the best life that you can have. You know that ultimately there's nothing better. There's nothing this world can offer that can ever give you the fulfillment, and the peace, and the joy, and the satisfaction. Nothing you can ever find under a tree will ever be able to give you what Jesus can give you. And you know that, but are you willing to make the change? Are you willing to let go of what the world has? If you do, you'll be satisfied this Christmas. I guarantee it. No matter what you get, no matter what you're able to do, no matter what family, no matter how many disappointments you've had in Christmas, there are people who lose family members on Christmas or around Christmas, and so it becomes a sad time of year. And every time Christmas rolls around and everybody else is singing and having a great time, you're thinking, "This is terrible. My life is awful," and I'm reminded of it every Christmas. It doesn't matter what your Christmas is like, Jesus can make it a fulfilling Christmas. Jesus can redeem it for you, can make it your birthday, like the choir sang about. The battle for the world is raging. It's going on. And behind the Christmas lights and the ornaments and the presents and the wrapping paper and all those great things, lives are being lost. And we are the resistance. We are, brothers and sisters, Christians, we are the resistance. And Jesus has charged us with the duty to make a difference that is infinitely more important than a new sweater or candy in your stocking. There is so much more riding on Christmas than anything else. When you wake up on Christmas morning, I hope it's a good morning. I hope you have a great day, but I hope you're not distracted by the presents. I hope the turkey and the ham and the mashed potatoes and the pies and the cookies and all those things aren't the only thing that fills your thoughts. I pray that I hope that you remember that Christmas is about giving your life to set people free, because that's what Jesus did for us. Gave his life, invaded the world in a secret mission to save lives. That's what Christmas is about. It's a battle, and I hope that you remember that on Christmas. And when you give your life for that, when you invest your all into that, when everything is focused on giving yourself so that other people can have freedom from slavery and freedom from sin and new life in Jesus Christ, you will know the fulfillment that you'll never, ever find under a tree or in a stocking. And you will know peace, and you will know what it's like to have true life. Jesus said, "I came that they may have life and have it to the full." You want to know what full life is about? Open the gift of Jesus Christ into your life this Christmas and see the difference. I hope you're blessed. Let me pray for you. God, thank you so much that you You give us so much. You give us more than we can dream of, more than we can imagine, more than we can... We think sometimes we get caught up in this world because it has a flashy message. And it's great at commercials, Lord. And we get caught up in those commercials that are selling everything. And we think sometimes we can buy our way to happiness, or drink our way to happiness, or party our way to happiness, or whatever, our way to happiness. And it just never works. And we're always let down, and we're always disappointed, and we're always sad and depressed and overwhelmed and stressed out and worn down and tired. And God, you've given us the way that can take care of all that, so that we don't have to fear, and we don't have to worry, and we don't have to be hopeless and depressed, that no matter what happens, that we can have a fulfillment and a peace that passes understanding, and a joy that is with us, and a contentment that never leaves us, no matter what Christmas is like, no matter what our days are like any time through the year. And I thank you that you offer that to us. And I pray that everyone here who hasn't seen that will see that, will see how valuable Christmas is and what it really is about. Be with us, Lord. Let us see your truth, and let us fight with you to save lives. In your name we pray, Jesus. Amen.